Blog Talk Radio.
We're back. Regular time, regular place, regular everything. It is Murder 123. This is Dr. John Stamey, live from the vacation capital of the world. Now, we call it the vacation capital of the world, Myrtle Beach. But there's another place that calls themselves the vacation capital of the world. Do any of my co-hosts know what that is?
I'm not sure. I thought it was in California.
Disneyland.
Well, it's Orlando.
That's the place of dreams.
Well, there's a reason that I mention this, because this kind of relates to our topic tonight. But first, I want to introduce my co-hosts and see how you doing tonight. Ladies first, Robin McRae, how are you doing tonight? In the chilly Midlands.
I tell you what, I like it better than the heat. But I'm doing good. Thanks. How's everybody out there tonight?
In Radio Land, we're doing pretty good. We really are. In Radio Land, boy, that sounds like from 1960, doesn't it? And from the real cold northern outpost of this podcast, Harlan, Kentucky. Tony, it's cold as blue blazes up there.
It's cold. It's been flooding. It's been really, really springish here, but it's getting better. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good. Good to hear your voice, Tony.
You too,
excited.
Robin.
Now, I want to talk to y'all about something. You know, I was talking about there is a battle going on between Myrtle Beach and Orlando, at least here on the East Coast. When they say the vacation capital of the world, they're talking about the East Coast. So that's the whole point. It's like, who is number one? Myrtle Beach wants to say that they're number one. Orlando probably is number one. But Myrtle Beach does, in a period of 100 days, Myrtle Beach probably is number one. But for another 265 days, I guarantee you Orlando is number one. We have in this country a mania about charts, about Billboard music charts, about who won the Academy Award, the winners and the losers, number one and number two. I think both of you will agree that we are very much a rating-driven culture. Might you agree?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, well, I love it because, you know, when I was doing research for our show tonight, it occurred to me that we have had some serial killers with insane records. Now, it occurred to me that I have read that two different people are the most prolific serial killers of this and the last century, since 1900, okay? Now, we're not talking about the Jack the Ripper type. I mean, Jack the Ripper supposedly only killed 8, 10, 12, 15 people. I mean, that's tremendous. That's horrible. It's a tragedy. But it's nothing like the competition that we have between two murderers tonight. Now, I'm not trying to be grisly or gruesome, but yeah. About 2 years ago, I read a story about a guy, and it says this is a release from the FBI, and it calls this man the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. And he was found. It's really interesting how this fella, and it's Samuel Little. He is he was 78 years old when he was pegged for a murder in Kentucky. And this was, this is in 2012. So I guess today he would be 85 years old. And
is there anything that doesn't happen in Kentucky? I'm telling you.
No, it all happens in Kentucky. Right, Tony?
It's the water.
Be careful about
just
that water, Tony. That carried away a bunch of
stay away, Tony.
Yeah, don't drink the water. You'll be fine.
Absolutely. Tony, tell us the quick story about the rescuers that went into the mobile home and what happened to the lady when she stood up. If you want to talk about water in Kentucky.
Yeah. This past week, the floodwaters hit us so quickly that a lot of people didn't have time to evacuate and didn't know that it was getting that bad that quick. And the emergency services woke them up by pounding on the door, and the lady inside said she didn't know what was going on until she was getting up to go answer the door, but she figured it out whenever her feet went about knee deep in water inside the mobile home. So she figured out real quick what was going on then. But if they hadn't have got to them, it would have been a bad evening for them. But whenever she got up, she went about knee deep in flood water.
Stay out of that Kentucky water. But then, of course, there's that. But then Elvis got a song called Kentucky Rain, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Stay out of the water. So anyway, we got this fella named Samuel Little. But he was in jail already, and he has confessed. They say a new report from the FBI states that Samuel Little confessed to 93 murders, and the FBI believes each one of these confessions are credible. Little was arrested at a homeless shelter in Kentucky on narcotics charge from stemming from California. Once he was extradited back to California, DNA evidence connected him to three other unsolved homicides in California, leading to a conviction and life in prison. He'd been on the radar of law enforcement for a number of years after avoiding a murder indictment in Mississippi and a conviction in Florida in the 1980s. His arrest led to the FBI's violent criminal apprehension program to work up profiles on Little and his history. Now, between the analysis and confessions that he made, it's now believed he was responsible for up to 93 murders, 50 of them already verified, while the others are pending confirmation. Now, how did all this go down? Well, the FBI says he would kill marginalized or vulnerable women who were either involved in prostitution or addicted to drugs. He was a former heavyweight boxer, so Little would punch his victims, dazing them before he strangled them to death. He claims he killed the victims between 1970 and 2005. And I tend to believe that if someone was doing that, they probably knew that number on top of their head. I mean, on the top of their head. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but I mean, you know, I remember how many golf tournaments I won, which is one. I'll never forget that one. It was a great moment. Not that golf is the same as murder, although you feel like you want to kill somebody when you play terribly. No pun intended. That was a terrible joke. Robin, will you forgive me for that joke?
I will, but you know what? I won one golf tournament, too, and it was because the other people didn't show up. I was the only one in it. So don't feel bad.
Yay. We're proud of you. So you and I are tied. We are tied.
Yeah.
Yep. And so anyway, it's very grisly. He would just meet girls at bars or meet them on the street if they were prostitutes. He'd pick them up, he'd punch them out, and strangle them. And it was because of DNA. Well, it is. It really is. I just don't think people like that are. They're just not normal. They can't be. Because he seemed to have no remorse when they would interview him.
Right.
And now, Tony, we know that you do deal from time to time with the criminal element, right?
Well, yeah, what I do is, you know, I'm not sworn law enforcement. I just do ordinance enforcement. But I have worked with agencies. Whenever I was doing a lot more risk management, I've worked with state and federal agencies before, but nothing like on that level. But I can tell you that these guys are off the charts. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, so the FBI claims that Samuel Little is the most prolific serial killer since 1900.
Wow.
But you know what? They always forget South Carolina. You know, I just always feel like we're just stuck out there on an island somewhere and nobody ever remembers. Well, actually, for those of you that don't know, Myrtle Beach is on an island. Did you know that?
Yeah, kind of, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. There's three bridges. There's one coming over that goes east-west, and then there's one north-south up the north end, and then there's one north-south at the bottom end. So we're really on an island. So, you know, I guess they stuck us on an island for a reason. I guess because we want to be number one and they want to forget us. Well, I always remember, because I've lived in Myrtle Beach so long, does anybody there's a guy named Donald Herman Parrott Jr. That is not a toe-tap and I remember you name, is it?
No. I was just going to say,
Tony?
I feel bad for him. No wonder he turned out bad after his parents named him that.
Listen, I've got news for you. He did not know until he was 19 years old that his first name was Donald. His mother, pardon my grammar, didn't give a damn about him. And this is the worst case of child neglect I have ever in my life seen. But the story goes like this. That is the real name of the meanest man of all time, Pee Wee Gaskins. Truly a name that strikes fear, that during a period struck fear in the hearts of people. Pee Wee Gaskins, I believe, and so does the South Carolina Bureau of Investigation, we believe that Pee Wee Gaskins is actually number one, and by a, this is terrible to say, a large margin over dear old Samuel Little. And the reason that I remembered all this is because Pee Wee Gaskins is from Florence, a town of 138,000 people, and it's only about an hour and a half from here. And I've had two third-party run-ins with Pee-wee. And I know that sounds crazy. But, you know, you're talking about 6 degrees of separation. Well, actually, Pee-wee and I have 2 degrees of separation. And let me tell you the story about him. I mean, this is terrifying. He was born in 1933 in Florence County Hospital. His mama's name was Eula Parrott. And he had an untold number of illegitimate brothers and sisters. Miss Eula loved a lot of men, I'm going to tell you that. He was really small when he was born, always small, and he got the name Pee-wee. And even when he was a grown man, he was only 5'2" and weighed about 125 pounds. He was a tiny guy.
Yeah, he was.
Here's the kind of neglect that he went through. When he was 1 year old, he drank a bottle of kerosene. And that caused him to have convulsions and seizures for 2 years. I think she took him to the hospital, and then she never took any more care of him. He just had convulsions. I mean, a poor little kid never had a chance. He never did. And he was ultimately convicted for robberies, assaults, and gang rapes and rapes. But he had a really, really rough life. He was sent to reform school fairly early, and he was regularly raped there. He escaped, and he got married. But then he voluntarily came back to complete his sentence, and he was released in 1951. Now, that must tell you he didn't have the world's greatest wife. If you would go back to reform school for a year and a half to get out of your marriage, that was horrible. And he got out, and he worked at a tobacco plantation for a couple of years. And his first real crime spree is a girl insulted him. and he beat her up with a hammer. He got put in the pokey for 6 years, and that was at the old South Carolina Penitentiary. And I can tell you, South Carolina Penitentiary is legendary awful, okay? And due to the fact that he was small, he was beaten and raped continually. But then he got some respect from his fellow inmates when he murdered the meanest man in that prison, Hazel Brazil. So he only got an extra 3 years for murdering this guy in prison. So, I mean, you know, back then, the criminal justice system wasn't exactly what it is now. Because if you remember when we talked about Bonnie and Clyde, we talked about lots of people. It's like you do something bad, armed robbery, you'd get a couple of years in jail, they'd just let you out. None of this 7 years hard labor. I mean, they want to get rid of you, get you back in society so you could go do it again. But anyway, it was just a mess. And so, you know, so anyway, he came out on parole in 1961. Now, can you imagine you beat up a girl with a hammer and then you murdered some guy in prison and you end up out of the pokey in 10 years? And you snuck out in the back of a garbage truck. I mean, and went to Florida, of course. Well, what can you say? Then he went in a traveling circus. I guess he idolized P.T. Barnum. But anyway, so then they found him, and what happened was in November 1975, Pee Wee, I guess they were drinking. And he told one of his criminal buddies all about some murders he'd committed, and they found him for killing somebody else. So his buddy confessed for a lighter sentence and told them where these bodies were buried. So anyway, in December of 75, Pee Wee took the police to some land he owned in Prospect, South Carolina. You remember Clinton to the left, Prosperity on the right? Well, Prospect is kind of near there in the middle of the state. And he showed them where he buried bodies of 8 people. Now, here's my 2 degrees of separation between myself and Pee Wee Gaskins. I was out selling life insurance, and I sold life insurance for a long time. And there was this really nice lady. I had a lead for her, and she was in Atlanta. Has anybody ever heard of Atlanta? I challenge you.
No.
Tony, Robin, I challenge you. Have you ever heard of Atlanta, South Carolina?
No. But I'm a newbie I've only been here 2 years.
No, Robin. The Piggly Wiggly went out of business, and that was the only business in town. Now they've got now it's just an IGA and 2 gas stations. One is closed. And but the every night during the spring and the summer, they play baseball there at the junior high. They got a huge field, and that's the only thing that lights up the night sky around Atlanta. Not Atlanta, but Atlanta. All right. So anyway, he kept coming by. He had a black hearse. This is what Mama told me, is that there was this boy, and he said his name was Pee Wee. He's a really short guy, and he just loved her daughter. And he kept wanting daughter to go out with him. But daughter said, you know, that hearse that he drives is too creepy. Golly, what could be in there? Well, it turns out, guess what was in there?
Bodies.
Just one, but.
Just one, a little one. Does that matter, really, if it's only one?
Yeah, well, it's bad. So anyway, her mother wanted me to meet her. Her mother thought I would be perfect for her. Now, she's about 20 years older than me, and she was probably the size of the hearse. And size does matter sometimes when the a young lady this someone's trying to fix you up with is twice your words can matter. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's like it does make life a little difficult. But yep, Pee Wee came by for about 3 months. I saw pictures of that young lady when she was whenever she was in high school, and she was very attractive. And Pee Wee had every reason to want to come by and see her and go out with her. But we all got the idea that had she gone out with him, that would have been the last going out she ever had.
Yeah,
so
probably.
So I mean, you know, that's my 2 degrees of separation with Pee Wee Gaskins. But then
you needed
further
separation.
Well, yeah, but at least
first for a reason.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
I mean,
you know, people drive
first. That was his calling card. He was advertised. He was telling people he was smarter than they were. You know, look what I'm doing. I'm even driving a dang hearse around. You know, I'm at.
It's like putting up a billboard.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't do anything wrong, and I try not to advertise at all. You know, it's just like stay away
yeah,
from me.
Yeah, but I mean,
everybody.
It's almost like because he was so abused as a kid, and at that point in time, he couldn't fight back. So now that he did fight back, it's like he's trying to make sure everybody knows, don't mess with me because I will fight back. This is what I'm capable of.
It's not. I'm not going to fight back. I'm going to kill. I'm going to kill you. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
He wanted to make them feel the pain that he had felt.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It all comes down to control. I mean, he had no control over what happened to him as a child. So now that he's an adult, he's going to control everybody. And he probably hated women more so than men because it was his mother's hand that abused him. And she did nothing to stop the other sexual abuse.
And then, plus, the women's going to be, with his small stature, the women are going to be easier targets.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you combine that, and that's just in his mindset, and that's a recipe for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now it gets worse. It gets closer to home for me. When he was on death row, there was a fellow there named Mr. Simo. And Mr. Simo's son had contracted Pee-wee to kill this couple in a little convenience store in Burgess, South Carolina. Well, he hired him to rob the store, and then the whole thing got bungled, so Pee-wee killed him. And that's 5 miles from where I live. It's in a place called the Burgess Community, right down Highway 707. It's a little scary down there. It really is. It's very run down. It's getting a little bit better, but I mean, so Pee-wee is trying to do a robbery and then he kills an elderly couple. So I mean, and that's just right. That's so close to me. I mean, I can get there in less than 10 minutes, driving 35 miles an hour. So I mean, you know, this guy's been around here and everything. So it was just unbelievable what he did. So
absolutely.
They estimate because he claimed, not knowing what Samuel Little said, he claimed to have committed between 100 and 110 murders. And the last murder apparently was the daughter of a South Carolina state senator from Sumter, which is just, you know, maybe 30 miles from Florence. So he was killing people all over. I mean,
yeah, but when he started to go for a politician's daughter, that's making a statement. That's not just killing. That's making sure that he was noticed.
Right.
He was noticed, all right.
13 years old?
The daughter, yeah. It would be hard to believe that it wasn't more than just a murder, that she might have suffered some mistreatment and abuse from Pee-wee before the murder.
I'm sure, because as sexually abused as he was, I would think that would continue, because it's all about the anger and the hatred that he couldn't do anything to stop it. And now he's going to make everybody else go through it because he did. And it's that control.
Yeah, and you know what? Now, Robin, I hope you don't mind this analogy with you. But the there's a dog rescue that calls you when they have abused dogs, and
Absolutely. You
normally take them in. The dogs you get are scared.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not nice, and then
right. All
you do is show them a little bit of love, and you give it a week or two or three, and all of a sudden you've got a wonderful pet. And
Absolutely. I'm
sure when I come to visit, I'm hanging out with some of those poor dogs that were just terribly abused. They should not have been abused. And just all you have to do is be nice to them and take care of them. And they a lot of times they get
well,
flourish. Correct?
Oh, they absolutely do. And we just got done placing one.
And if there had been some type of a foster situation where that little kid could have gone to, he probably wouldn't have gone to reform school the first time.
Exactly.
And he would be, what would he be? He'd be about, 90-something, probably have six great-great-grandchildren. And he had some land, so, I mean, you know, he wasn't broke. So, I mean, I just think that it's a shame, you know, what happened to him, because that was a life wasted. I know people might not agree with
it.
Whenever that happened to him, that was like flipping a domino for the other 110 people, because what happened to him directly affected those folks. Those folks.
100 people.
Or like thereof.
How about the 20 to 50 people in their families? Suppose there are 35 people. So it's 35, 350, 3,500, and then probably an equal amount of friends. So that's 7,000 people whose lives were affected by the abusive, neglective mother. That's a terrible thing to go through in your life or in the afterlife when you realize that you caused huge harm to over 7,000 people.
Well, yeah, and then you look at these people that, you know, like we already discussed, this comes from the abuse that was done to him as a child, and none of these people had anything to do with that abuse. But, yeah, because of it shows the snowball effect, the actions of one and what it does. I mean, the mother started this cycle, and then when this child was being abused, not only from her but from other people, she stood aside and did nothing. I mean, for a child that's 1 year old to drink, you know, kerosene or whatever it was he drank, hurt himself. That shows you just how deeply scarred and bad it was for him. And this woman did nothing to protect this child, nothing. And so when he got big enough, he took it out on anybody and everybody he had contact with. But it's sad because not only what happened, but none of those people had anything to do with the pain and suffering that this man went through. You know, and it doesn't sound like the person that did was ever, you know, had any consequences for it. She basically created this monster, which,
right.
you know,
you,
because he was filled with pain and rage.
And you go back to the kerosene. Why would mom have a bottle of kerosene around? She had maybe had coal oil lamps. We don't know that mom didn't give him a bottle of kerosene trying to get rid of it.
Let me explain something. A 1 year old cannot open a bottle of kerosene and drink it by himself.
No, he cannot.
He couldn't hold
it.
It's too heavy for him. Too heavy. You know, I mean, he's not.
Well, I don't have the motor skills. He doesn't have the motor skills to pick up and drink anything.
Right. So now let's redefine bottle. Was it a baby bottle that she tried to kill him? Did she pour it in his baby bottle, or did he pick up a glass bottle of kerosene? You know.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing he did this by himself.
Yeah. As a 1 year old, how could he pick up anything like that?
Right.
I don't see how he could.
I mean, you can't get a 1 year old to do anything but wake up when you're trying to sleep. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
That's the only thing you can get a 1 year old to do, and then you have to say I love you, hold him, and get him back to sleep. That's all you can do. Goodness, it's just, you know, it's terrible. And we know we did some bad things.
But the other thing is, what kind of a parent has kerosene in an area that a 1 year old can get to?
Right.
I mean, we all know I had a ton of kids, and I'll tell you what, I made darn sure there was nothing like that around them. And that's not called being a perfect parent. It's called being responsible. You just don't have the chemicals and stuff around a child. And at 1 year old, they're toddling all around, and half of them are still, you know, learning to walk. There's just no way he can get a kerosene bottle and drink it. It's just not possible.
You know, Robin, you always joke about still being the safety police. I think being the safety police is a good thing.
Yeah, I try. I think I drive people nuts with it, but you know what? At least they're safe.
I think I was told that when I was 1 year old, I would drag out cans from the cupboard, you know, because they had shelves and things, you know, below the sink, and then I would open the door when I was 1 year old, and I would just drag the cans out and stack them. And I mean, that was about as much as a 1 year old or 1.5 year old could do, you know. In fact, my mother was so proud when she came in, and my dad said, "Look what he's doing!" And I was building like a little house. I mean, you know, it was just, and I was about the most trouble I could get into. So I had great parents. I hope you're listening, Mom and Dad. But so it's a shame, and it looks like Pee Wee Gaskins probably won the award.
I think so.
And number one for the most, but it is just a shame that I think his was a result of abuse. I don't know much about Samuel Little, but I know Pee Wee just, you know, it is a shame that he had to go through that.
Samuel Little is interesting. He started his crime spree in 1970, right? Somewhere around that area.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But there was an unsolved murder that took place here, which a good friend of mine, Darla Jackson, Darla Saber Jackson, she was able to figure out with the help of some other folks through DNA who the victim was, like 50 years later, she solved that part of the cold case. But this was an unidentified, and I can't, and for the life of me, I can't remember her real name, but you know, everybody around here just called her Jane Doe. And that's what was on her tombstone. It was on her marker, was Jane Doe. No, it was Caroline, I'm sorry. They wanted to give her a name, not be so impersonal, it was Caroline. And I'm going to look at this guy just a little bit more and see if he confessed to anything in this part of the country, because that, as of still to this day, that murder has not been solved. And she was murdered and dumped. She was from Eola, Kentucky, which is about an hour from where I'm at. And I think she had been raised up rough, and she may have been into prostitution or drugs or something, and ended up dead on a secluded mountain trail in June of 1969.
That would be right in the middle of Samuel Little. It really would.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he did. I just find it coincidental with this guy.
I'm going to take a recess for about 2 minutes because I know where to find the map of the locations where Samuel Little admitted to commit murders. So if you'll let me have 2 minutes, I will find that, and I'll, and Tony, I will see if there's a little peg up there in the western northwest. No, eastern Kentucky. Yeah, just give me a minute if I can now turn the show over to Robin and Tony. Let me find this because
sure.
I think this would be very interesting if we could do that. We may as well do it now. I mean, that's why we're here, right?
Oh yeah, it's something to look at. It's interesting, and like I said, I'm not saying that he did do it but it's very interesting that he started his career about the time this young lady disappeared and was murdered.
Well, and if he's doing it the same parallel as the other guy, you almost wonder if it's kind of a competition going on there.
I think that once these folks get a taste of it, it's an adrenaline rush. And plus, I think that evil. I mean, you have to be evil to do that. I mean,
yeah.
if you're that insane, then you're gonna be drooling and pooping your drawers and not able to walk around hardly in society. And I know that there's a lot of insane people that are super smart, but I just think there is something more going on for you want to kill that many people. I mean, without any, they've not hurt your family. You have no motivation. You have nothing, you know, it's just like.
Well, you wonder what's going on with Little too, because when you read about him, he preferred women that were prostitutes or drug addiction or that type of thing. So he preyed on the ones that were already mentally weak.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying he didn't kill other women as well, but that was primarily his target.
And were those type of women like his mother? What his mother was.
Exactly. And I don't think we have a lot on his mom, do we?
No, just that she was.
But I would almost bet that she has some tie to that.
Well, okay, folks, here's what I can tell you, and this is very interesting. There is a circle around Kentucky where he operated. It was in Ohio, Illinois, and then, Tony, it was just a string of incidences, Memphis, Chattanooga.
Okay,
let me
interrupt you. Do you know there was a piece of evidence found from a cleaners in Ohio? It's a crime scene.
For Little?
Yeah. For a cleaner, a little ticket from a cleaners in Ohio. I don't remember the name of it, but it was
Southwest
just
Ohio.
Across the border. Yeah.
Exactly. That is exactly where it is. I mean, yeah, it is right on the border. And the thing is the little let's see. Yeah, and they have a, because he actually sat with a criminal artist and described the women that he had killed. So, yeah, we have the southwestern Ohio, and then we have one in, see, I mean, they only have 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10 I don't know if they're 14, 15, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. They only have 27 markers on this United States map. And so it is not a 28. I'm sorry. It is not inconceivable that he operated in Kentucky. And that was the woman who died. Was she African American?
No. She was a Caucasian female, early 20s.
Well, it's like, who knows, you know? So, I mean, yes, he operated right in that area. So, you never know, but that could be a possibility.
He operated out of Ohio, and there was a shred of paper, a receipt from a dry cleaner's found at the scene. But I'll pass it along to Darla. Darla will be able to do more with it than I will. She has tons and tons of information on it. And then if something, I'll keep you posted if anything comes of it.
Yeah, I want to hear.
That would be super interesting.
Yep.
But
wow.
It's amazing sometimes what, you know, and I'm not, like, again, I'm not saying that he did, that he killed Jane Doe on Little Shepherd Trail in 69. You got a guy that's killed 100 folks, you know, right at 100
yeah.
folks. You're going, well, that sure ups Annie a little bit. He needs
yeah.
to get that.
And how many murders did he do that we don't have any awareness of? I mean,
well,
if he's killing 100 people, for all we know, he killed 200. We just don't know that he did the rest of them. These are only the ones we know of.
Yeah. So anyway, you don't know. We live in a nice civilized world, or fairly civilized, and we just don't know. These things are going on right under our noses. They really are.
They really are.
And there could be a string of 15 murders, and they never. And maybe they can link them all to the same DNA, but maybe that person doesn't ever get caught for doing anything wrong, and they go around live and die with never being caught because they don't get in any trouble other than the murders that they've committed, and so their DNA
yeah.
is not on file anywhere. So it's
well,
and
if they're gonna go so far as to commit a murder, I have a hard time believing that's the only thing they're doing.
Right. And again, you know, what motivates, what did they ever say what their motivation was? I mean, when they're interviewing them, are they just saying, well, there was the first one, here was the second one, and here's the next five, and I've got eight on the back 40 over there? And, you know, did they say, you know, I did it because? Was there a definitive reason given? Other than they're just evil and crazy.
Yeah. I think they're so mentally imbalanced, it's hard to figure it out.
Because, you know, when you're trying to get
But I think when it came to Gaskin, they never said why he did any of it. But, I mean, with his background, with his mom, I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think he was – I mean, he killed men, too. But he killed more women than he did men. And I think that he was just an angry, angry person at all the injustices that were done to him as a child. And if his mom never gave – and, you know, didn't care about him anyway, there was no way for him to even learn how to cope with what was going on.
Well, and there's another thing that I just realized. If you drink kerosene, you are likely to suffer brain damage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking about that when you were talking about it earlier. He had convulsions. Convulsions can do brain damage.
And just the drinking, that's grain alcohol. That's the equivalent of grain alcohol, and that could just kill somebody, or it could destroy the mind, and it could render them unable to do whatever. So it's a horrible situation for 7, maybe 10,000 people because of the one thing that she did. You feel sorry. You have to feel sorry for everyone in this instance. You can't. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe some people can tell me differently. I just don't. I think everybody was a victim between Pee Wee and all of his murder victims and their families and friends. They were all victims.
Yeah.
Well, he's had the snap. I mean, when all this abuse was going on with him, he was in and out of institutions all his life. He was always. Where he was smaller, he was always the victim. And he had a choice, you know, several choices, I would say, that to, you know, when he got out, to say, hey, I don't want to do this. anymore. I don't want to be this kind of person anymore. But the mold, the die had already been cast. I guess when he was in the institution,
yeah.
That he just wanted to put that back on the world, what he perceived the world had done to him.
Yeah. And he was going to make everybody pay, and he did.
Everybody was going to pay for what happened to Pee-wee. Everybody was going to pay. You know, and I would like to get more, you know, if there was reports on the things or any interviews, what made him choose his victims? What was the deal? I mean, it would be like he's hunting, so what's he looking for? What's the common denominator? Or is he just so crazy that they just have to be a female or somebody weak, you know?
They were both men and women.
What do you know what the ratio was?
I would swear it was like half and half.
Wow.
But anyway, Tony,
he's wanting to control them.
I was going to say, Tony, if you have some vacation time, why don't you come down here to Myrtle Beach? And Robin, why don't you plan a vacation with you and your family here to Myrtle Beach, and then we'll head to Florence, and we'll get to the bottom of this.
That would be fun. That would.
There are a couple
fun.
Of books, but I've got an idea. I'm not going to say it because it's my idea, and I'm going to save it for the two of you, for my two teammates here. So let's talk about coming down to Florida. I know what to do. Isn't that great? I know what to do. So we won't mention that until later. We'll have a little conference call here very, 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 very soon and see if we can arrange it. Tony, you do have a day or two you could drop in on Myrtle Beach, right?
I should have, yes.
Good. Right. And Robin, you better, because maybe we can see some Bigfoot down here. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Oh, definitely. Come to my house.
That's simply on the porch.
That's what
I'm interested in. Also, is the activity going on at Robin's house.
Yeah.
I tell you, it's
been busy.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it has been busy.
It has been. But anyway, so that's what I know, and I've got the light bulb went on, so that's great.
Heaven help us.
Yeah, no, just on this one. So I'll fill y'all in, as we say down here in Myrtle Beach. I'll fill y'all in. But anyway, so that's what we have tonight. And now Tony has given us a preview of the cell block, because this might touch on our adventures tonight might touch on an unsolved murder up in Kentucky, which is very interesting. You never know where these things will lead. So that's what I had. And I mean, you know, it's interesting. I know that some people, when they do murder podcasts, they're kind of funny about it and make people laugh. And I think one thing that we do is we try to be very real about it. Sometimes people may not like it. You know, they may think it's boring, but it's very interesting, some of the aspects that we bring up. And then our resident empath, Miss Robin, might have some feelings one way or the other. And but you know, it's very interesting. So I guess what I'll say as we get close to quitting time. By the way, there's a phrase from my hometown of Morganton. I got to tell you what it is, and I'm going to see if anybody can guess what it means. They used to say, "It's as dead as 4 o'clock."
Quitting time.
Now, do you quitting know
time.
What that?
That's quiet time before the 5 o'clock rush.
Well, okay, that's your guess, Tony. What's your guess? It's dead as 4 o'clock.
Quitting time.
Yeah.
Oh, Tony, you come from a place where they had factories. Here's what that meant. At 3:55 p.m., Drexel Furniture shut down for a shift. And they didn't start back up until 4:30. So everybody left. And believe me, those guys got out of there, If it was at 3:55, the whistle blew, and they were gone in 2 minutes. And my dad said, he was the production manager there, he said, son, you would walk through that place, and you'd think it was a ghost town, and they'd just all been there, and just loud as it could be, and everything 5 minutes ago. Because I asked him, I said, why do you say it's as dead as 4 o'clock? That's a phrase that comes from Morganton, North Carolina, and Drexel Furniture Company, Table Rock Plant Number 6. That's where it comes from. But, that's where dead is 4 o'clock. I guess that's an appropriate joke for Murder 123. But anyway, as we get close to our theoretical 4 o'clock, does anybody have any news that they'd like to share with our listeners? Or are we going to let the whistle blow?
I'm trying to think what news. I mean, around here it changes daily.
Well, I know.
I actually have a question. Robin, do you pick up anything on Gaskins? I mean, are you picking up anything on
There's
on
something
Peeling?
Attached to Gaskin. I really feel like there is. I think this is my own personal opinion, and you know, in my own little wacky world, I think that his mother had something attached to her, and I think that's partly why he was abused the way he was. I think it got some stick twisted thrill out of it. You know, I mean, and like we all know, these bad entities, these dark entities, they cause the problems because they feed on the negative energy that it creates. And then I think that as he got older, something attached itself to him because he kept in that mental frame of mind all the time. But I don't think he got the way he did by himself. He was haunted. I mean, and I don't mean haunted by a ghost, because this, what I'm seeing and feeling, is not a ghost. It's an entity.
Possessed. I think,
yeah.
I mean, that goes back to...
I agree, Tony. I think that one you could definitely say was a possession. But I feel like his mom brought it in. Whether it was she called something in or she did something, his mom had a lot to do with it. I mean, it really does feel demonic to me. And I don't say that lightly, because 9 out of 10 entities that you find, they're not demonic. They're just dark.
No.
Wow. There's a big difference.
Absolutely.
But this one feels demonic to me. This one really does feel demonic.
Well, I'll go back to saying, because you'll know I've stated this the entire time we've been talking about Pee Wee Gaskins. I think drinking that kerosene caused some brain damage that resulted.
But that makes it easier for possession.
I think it was a chain reaction, you know, the poor kid. And I mean, it was so unfortunate, because if you have brain damage from that, you're never going to be right. And the kid, you know, if he'd have it.
But for a possession or a dark entity, that would, just going to say, it makes it easier.
Easier for oppression or possession. The stuff like that makes it. I'm dealing with case that, and there's nothing really that we can help her with. We went in and we cleansed the house and we did some things, and there was she's mentally unstable. She is schizoaffective, and she's seeing things, goats and animals, and they're talking to her. And we went in about a year ago and tried to help these folks. And, you know, you don't know where the mental illness ends and the possession begins, or oppression, because she had altars built, two or three different Celtic entities. She had gotten in with a person out of New York that was supposed to be a sorcerer, a wizard, and he was allegedly having some telepathic interaction with her as well. But she's there's nothing that we can do. I mean, I don't know where the mental illness ends and the possession, but I know there's something there, because she keeps inviting it back, you know. And I know that we cleansed the house, and there was some, as we kept, had the back door open, there's some little shades. I don't know if I told the story or not, but the, it's a sliding glass door, and we got down to the last part of the house, and I said, well, we've not done this closet. We opened the closet up, and I got in all sage, and I had the blessed oil and all that, and something whizzed by me. I feel the wind off of it. And it rattled the shades as it shot out the back. And my girlfriend was standing by the door, and she didn't see. I can't remember. She said she saw like a shadow, or she just saw the shades jump. And she says, "Well, there it goes." She's real, you know, seasoned, so she didn't screech and run. She just said, "Well, there it goes." So with these things, I think that you don't know where the mental illness ends and the oppression or possession starts, because, you know, to kill 100 folks, you know, if we wanted to go down the rabbit hole a little bit, are those sacrifices? Or are those just, I hate the world? Okay, what's making him hate the world? And I understand he was abused and things like that, but there's a fine line when you start getting into things like this, and I don't call the oppression possession cause very much, but I mean, with serial killers, they're an interesting study, and I'll probably start studying them a little bit more and see what parallels I can draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you never know, and maybe one night soon we can have a program on that, if you would like. So we would think about it. We could each come up with an example. I think that would be pretty good and instructive. So that's what we can do. And Robin, so it's just been busy there at your house with all the paranormal activity and activity. Tony has the thought, and I've got a good idea of what we can do to explore the Pee Wee Gaskins thing even more, because
that's going to be interesting. I'm excited about that.
The little kid never had a chance, and I don't care what the result was. It wasn't his fault once he drank that kerosene.
No.
I mean, you know, and he was 18 years old before he knew what his first name was. God,
it just shows that. What a huge impact these formative years have. People don't really get just how important those early years are. You know, there's things that can happen in that time span that kids just can't get over. You know, I mean, that's when they're at their most vulnerable and their most innocent. And then taken advantage of and treated in that way, I mean, they're like a sponge at that age.
Yes.
They don't know anything yet. They don't know what the world's about. They don't know what they think it's going to be about. They don't know good from evil because they're just neutral. They are completely open. They are completely vulnerable. And when you do nothing but not show them the good and you only fill them with the bad, that's what they really think the world is. It's not that, you know, I'm not going to say they don't want to be bad. But I'm just saying that they don't know there's anything else other than that. Because that's what they've been taught.
Well, here's a funny story. Some friends of my family, when I was like 5 years old, they thought I was a cute little kid. So they did something they thought would be nice. They brought me over two chickens as a present. When I was 5 years old, and I don't know about you, I was petrified of those chickens. Because they kept trying to come toward me. And so even to this day, whenever I see chickens coming towards me, I just have this. And they were trying, listen, these folks were trying to be nice. And then when they left, my mother said to my father, "John, get rid of these now." So he took them up to my grandmother. But it was just like, and you know, I remember those chickens. One was blonde and the other one was dark red. And then they kept coming after me and just, "Oh no, get rid of them. And I went and locked myself in my room. They weren't going to get in my door. But anyway, yep, you got to be good to kids and take care of them. And Robin, when you get dogs to rescue, we appreciate the good things you do with them. I can't wait to meet the newest member of your household.
Yeah,
little boy named
a new member.
Blue.
Blue. We had no intention or knowledge that he was going to come into our lives, but one of the woman that handles the adoption events and I were sitting there talking, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, I try to take in as many as I can. I'm not the only one in this rescue that does it, but I am one of them. And we were talking, and she said, so when are you going to have enough? And I said, I don't think about it that way, because whatever needs to be with me finds its way. I don't have to go out and look for it. It's the same thing with the Bigfoots. I didn't go looking for them. They found me. And it's the same thing with all these rescues and adoptions that I have here. And my guess is that this little baby Blue is probably not ever going to leave this house, because I don't think I could pry him away from my husband. But the truth of the matter is, you know, he's another one. We had no knowledge we were getting, and he was living by himself under a house for 2 days, and he's about 4 weeks old. Mom took off with two other, it's feral, and when the lady that owned the house realized they were there, the mom and the other two puppies took off, and he was left to fend for himself, and the woman pulled him out from under the house because she didn't want him under there, and brought him in and said, I don't know what to do with him, here he is. And I just happened to be there. I mean, I think as cute as this little bugger is, they might have been able to find somebody, but I just happened to be there, and it wasn't even a question. It's like, okay, he's going home, you know. And he's just as precious as can be, just a little tiny pipsqueak with the heart of a lion. Oh, my goodness. He runs through the herd of these dogs like he owns the place, and he doesn't even come up to my ankle. I mean, he's just a fool. He's literally gray, baby blue eyes.
If anybody came to your house when you say he just plows right through the herd, I mean, the herd almost knocks me down whenever they go out to the backyard. I mean, they do. This is not for the faint of heart, is it, Robin?
No, there are days. Now, it is chaos. It's sometimes organized chaos, but there can be days. It depends. I get a lot of the Bigfoot in the backyard, and they're all going crazy, and it just shakes up the entire routine. And God love them, they all have a routine, especially Chester when he knows Uncle John's in the house. His routine is, I will lay on top of Uncle John because Uncle John will continually feed me cookies. So,
and I look at him,
he loves it.
And I just quote Animal House, and I say, you are worthless and weak. I guess you need a cookie. And he just perks right up.
He's perfectly happy being told that, as long as it gets him food. Food and a woman is the only thing that gets that boy off the couch, I'm telling you. But, you know, like I said, it's an organized chaos. Everybody knows where they're supposed to go, and everybody knows where they're supposed to be, and they also know when they veer off from that and they go where they're not supposed to be, they get the mom voice and they get in trouble. And, you know,
that
mom
voice
works. I've got two dogs that are feral that I'm working with out in Nieces in South Carolina, and both females were pregnant. One's now had four puppies, but she's got the puppies hidden, and the only way I can see them is she brings them out on the trail cam, and I get pictures of them that way. So I can't go in and start removing anybody because I don't know how many puppies they are. I mean, I didn't know, and the other one is due to deliver any day, so I drive out there every day and take food and water. And I went out there the other night. Now there's two Great Pyrenees out of there. And the Pyrenees male, the white female's pregnant as well. The Pyrenees male is standing guard over everybody. And I finally got the one that had the puppies to start coming up to me. And I thought, great, I'll be able to get her and the babies out of here within the next week. And he blew that right out of the water. She came up to me and he charged me and he was not backing down. And I was too far away from the car to get to the car. I know what else to do. I used the mom voice. Boy, he stopped right in his tracks, and he hightailed it into the woods so fast. Like, good Lord. But, yeah. So
Robin, I've got a quick story to tell you. When I was selling life insurance, I was up in Andrews, South Carolina. And, you know, I was in a not very desirable location, going knocking on some doors one Saturday afternoon. And I started up this set of stairs, and this big, mean dog came out from under the house and looked like he was going to eat me alive.
Yeah.
And I yelled at him, and I said, you get away from me. That was the most stern dad voice I've ever put on. And he just took right back underneath that thing. I jumped in my car and got out of there.
I'm telling you.
I've done it twice, and it works. They know when
it
dad,
does.
Mom or
it
dad.
Does.
Yeah, well, you know. And
well, Pat's always telling me, you know, she'll bring out that mom voice. And when we got one of our rescues, we actually got him from Second Chance Rescue that I help now, because as I was going to Walmart, he started mind speaking with me to come help him. And I didn't know where he was at or even what he was. So he showed me a picture of himself in my mind. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know how to find you. And he's like, oh, I'm scared. I'm in a cage. And I said, are you being hurt? And he said, not anymore, but I'm scared. And so I'm on my way to Walmart. And the next thing I know, I'm pulling into Tractor Supply. And I'm thinking, why am I here? There's not one thing in this building that I need. So I thought, okay. So I walk in the door and I look to my left. And there he sits in a cage with Second Chance Rescue. Hand to God. I was like, I looked at that lady and I went, oh, my God. And she kind of looked at me funny. I said, do you have any adoption papers? She probably thought, she told me later, so it was the weirdest adoption she's ever had. I said, have you got adoption papers for him? And she said, well, yeah, do you want to get him out and look at him? I'm like, no, that's not how it works. I just need the papers. So I get out of there and I called Pat at home and I'm like, I want you to have time to think about this. And he said, about what? And I told him what happened and he said, you realize we already have 6 dogs. I said, of course we have 6 dogs already. I said, but this is what went on. And he said, well, they're going to do a home inspection the following week. He says, what are you waiting for? Just have them do it tomorrow. Let's get it over with. You know he's coming home anyway. I said, okay. And he came the next day, and he's not even the same dog. I mean, his Second Chance was wonderful to him. It was his original owners that were abusive. And he has just grown leaps and bounds. I mean, he is not even the same dog at all.
This
he's just
changed.
Such a love.
Yeah, yep. This is Chase, right? Oh yeah, Chase
yep.
is the best. They're all the best. They're all the best in their own way. All right.
Yep.
Well, you know,
we look at him and we're like, we couldn't get rid of him.
Yep. No, not him. He's great, but he's not Chester. But anyway, and everybody knows Chester's my favorite dog. So anyway.
Yep.
Anyway, I want to thank
you're his favorite person too.
I'm glad
you and Pat.
And I want. and y'all. We love Murder 123. Thank you. We will explore our project on Pee Wee Gaskins, and I want both of you to have a marvelous week. I'll be getting back up.
Sure.
To I've got another podcast on Thursday night, and maybe if I can have some help from Robin and Tony, but I'll
of
check
course.
With you and let you know. How's that, Tony? I'll check with you.
That sounds good.
My
right.
people will
y'all
get with your people, John.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And Tony, stay out of the way. That's right. That's what we do. And Tony, please stay out of the Kentucky rain, okay?
Absolutely.
Oh, my. Stay out of that. Robin, you stay
if it keeps
stay out
raining,
of the
just build an ark and come pick us up.
That's what I'll do. I thought we were going to call in the ark the other day.
I'm telling you, it was bad up here.
Yeah, I tell you what, we had our share of it here in Myrtle Beach. But anyway, thanks a lot, folks. It's great to talk to you. We
you
always enjoy
care.
It.
You guys take
care. But we'll all right, see
you guys
each other
too.
Next week. 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on Murder 123. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye,
Robin. Bye, John.
Bye.
Bye. Because I wanted to see if you wanted to.